Such sights to show you.
And I was like, if you people don't get normal fucking jobs, I'm gonna kill everybody. Like, I don't know why you guys are this drunk. It's 4 o'clock and you've been to 8 breweries. Like, that's it.
Or you can summon the devil and convince them to kill themselves. Huh?
That's always a possibility.
Ooh, good segue.
How dare you be a host?
I'm doing it for
years. Shepherd me like a goat that needs shepherding.
Hey, these goats also all died, so.
Like a tripod goat?
Oh, no, not the tripod goat. Oh, man, that was good. Are we ready? Are you guys ready?
I'm ready. I'm ready to roll.
We're ready. I think we're ready.
On that note, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster, and with me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Yo.
Phil Acevedo.
Hello.
And joining us for a second time on the podcast, but a friend of the network, Danny Gutierrez.
It's part 3, ma'am, but I am hyped to be back.
Is it 3?
Yeah, I was like, he's been on more than once, right?
It was Storm of the Century and...
Halloween.
Oh, Halloween. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Part 3.
It's okay. We try to forget that movie all the time over here.
Hey! Shut the fuck up.
Don't bring evil Phil
out. Yeah, Phil. I'm high-fiving Phil right here.
No, digitally. Man. You're giving me the tag? You tagging me in?
No. No.
Oh. Tagging you in.
Not. This is my last pick for birthday month. I fucking act like it.
Don't put the sunglasses on.
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody! Oh my god.
The last pick of the birthday month. Alex Webster.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
And if you're down with Halloween 2, I got 2 words for you.
Rob Zombie!
Okay, Alex, sorry. We're sorry.
Okay, sorry, Alex.
Wow.
I feel like she had an aneurysm for like a hot second.
No, I wish that had happened in person so you guys could all see my disappointing glare.
We can sense it pretty well. We've known you for a long time.
I hope you all can feel my disappointing glare right now.
Oh, I feel it. Oh, I can feel it. I can totally feel it.
Good.
I can feel it.
I hope you feel it. Anyway, on that note, we are covering my last birthday pick of this year. It's been a long month, guys. We've had some weird picks. This might be the most obscure pick of all of this month. We are covering the Shudder original, The Dark and the Wicked, or Shudder, what's the other word?
Exclusive.
Exclusive, thank you. Yeah. Shudder Exclusive, The Dark and the Wicked from 2020.
That's right, buddy.
Ghost has thoughts. So, kicking us off, per guest tradition, Danny is going to read off some of the credit information, including the IMDb synopsis.
Yay, IMDb!
Yay!
On a secluded farm in a nondescript rural town, a man is slowly dying. His family members gather to mourn, and soon a darkness grows, marked by waking nightmares and a growing sense that something evil is taking over the family.
I mean, that's okay. The movie.
Yeah? Yeah?
Saved you 90 minutes. Bam. All right. Done.
Yeah, 2 sentences. Yeah.
I don't know. I think on a secluded farm in a nondescript rural town, a man is slowly dying. Like, it just seems a little...
Mm-hmm. It's really poetic
for
the
IMDb.
Time.
They're really trying hard. They're like, set the scene. Okay, here's the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Here's the rest of the movie. 7.
Does seem like some middle school literature... Going
there you
on
go.
That
hey, okay.
Now, everyone, I want a 1 paragraph assessment on what you think this paragraph means.
This movie is about the dark and the wicked.
This movie that I watched at this day, 1,000 word minimum. God damn it.
Right? Oh, Jesus.
Trying to meet word minimums in college. Like, duh.
That's my pain.
It's adulthood, baby. Oh, yeah. All right. What else we got, Danny?
Sorry, my dog's dragging bones across the floor now.
Bones!
There's bones in the... Okay, anyway. This was written and directed by Brian Bertino and produced by Brian and Adrian Biddle. These are made-up names. This is a hiding from the government name.
Brian Bertino might sound familiar because he is the director of The Strangers, which we have covered.
Oh, that's right.
We covered last year or the year before in, like, July.
It was a Kathleen episode.
It was a Kathleen episode, yeah.
Hey, Kathleen. And then Adrian Biddle sounds like some kind of, like, fairy tale name.
It's the last name Biddle. Like, it's like bibbidi-bobbidi-poop. Like,
one of those dark German ones that they're just like, oh, and then, yeah, they lost their feet at the end.
Damn it. Sir?
He sounds like he's about to toss a coin to the Witcher.
There it is. Adrian Biddle.
This movie is starring Maren Ireland, Michael Abbott Jr., and Xander Berkeley.
These aren't real people.
Yeah. These people are hiding from something. They've created sins.
Oh, was that you, Webster?
Yeah, I'm being currently under attack.
By the USS Maren Ireland.
Oh, no. Not the Ireland joke.
God damn it.
No, but we were looking at Xander Berkeley's IMDb, and like he's been in like a lot.
Really? Let me see.
Xander Berkeley's the dad?
The priest.
The priest.
Oh, he's the priest.
The creepy
creepy
priest man.
Okay.
Candyman. Hey, Air Force One. Shanghai Noon.
Shanghai Noon.
Air Force One. Shanghai Noon.
I love Air Force One. That's a good movie. Get off
Terminator 2
plane.
Judgment Day? Oh, that's a
good
one.
Who the hell was he in Terminator?
That's a good one. I don't fucking know. I'm looking at this thing right now.
Does it say who he plays in Terminator?
Let's see. Hold on. We're so into this right now.
I know.
We're just so excited.
We're dissecting Mr. Berkeley's resume here.
That's totally fine.
It's a pretty stacked resume.
4-page outline. So take as much time as you'd like.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's got so many credits, it's hard to get to the T2 portion of it. I can control F. What am I, stupid? All right, Terminator 2. Judgment Day. He played...
I'm going to say he was the janitor who gets shot up in the mall. Hey, you can't come up in here.
Character That's named totally Todd Voigt. Todd Voigt.
Wait, was he the stepdad, Todd?
Oh, shit. I think
She's
right.
Not my mother, Todd.
Maybe. Remember? Oh, fuck. All right.
Dude, the
Cinema
stepdad.
Phil coming back again. There you go.
Oh, sure.
There you go.
Okay. Okay, all right.
Okay, back to this movie.
Back to this movie.
Terminator eventually.
We got a few release dates here. August 28th of 2020, the year of our Lord and Savior, the year we were blessed. It was released at Fantasia. November 6th, 2020, it was released in the United States. And February 24th, 2021, it was released on Shudder. Its box office was $422,174. And I was telling Alex before, I was on the hunt for the budget for this thing, and I couldn't find a damn thing.
I couldn't find shit. The only thing I could find was, like, Brian Bertino, who made The Strangers, had an $8 million budget. Like, I was like, that's not what I wanted the budget for. Right. I didn't want The Strangers budget. I wanted the Dark and the Wicked budget.
Dude, they had to get this fucking Xander Berkeley money over here. This guy's credits are stacked. He's definitely made more than the gross.
Yeah. The Strangers, is that the one with the car wash?
What?
The mask? Like, isn't there like a massacre that goes down inside of a car wash?
No.
No,
I don't think so.
No?
No. Damn. Strangers
is breaking and entering.
Yeah, it's like...
Yeah. They got the creepy masks on and stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. There's nothing at a car wash, though.
I'm thinking of a different movie. Reference to your audition episode, The Strangers is also featured on 101 Scariest Movie Moments.
Ooh, very cool. Very cool. Very cool. Strangers, I need to rewatch it. I don't know if I remember that one.
It's spooky.
Yeah, I would say it's spooky.
It's definitely another uncomfortable movie.
It's spooky. I wouldn't say it's... I don't know if I'd put it in 101 Scariest Movie Moments, but, you know, that's just me.
Right.
I remember the reasoning. It's a very, like, person who doesn't watch a lot of horror movies reasoning. So I think that's why, like, we do appreciate the spookiness of it, but it's not, like... something that genuinely freaked me out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay. I think...
Anywho.
Yeah, we talked about it on that episode, but it also was, like, based on, like, some real-life true crime shit, and which happened not far from where I grew up, so that's why it's extra spooky for me. But
yeah. Hell yeah.
Sick.
But we're not talking about Northern Californian horror. We're talking about Southern Gothic horror, so let's...
Nice.
I didn't write fun titles. I was just like, I don't know what to do with this. But we're going to talk a little bit about Southern Gothic horror, or just the subgenre in general. It's a subgenre
we're
that's...
We're going to talk a little Southern Gothic.
Hi there.
Okay, so instead of fun titles, we got to say the titles with fun voices. Bam, there you go.
Okay, Southern Gothic.
there you go.
I like my movies dark. Like I like my beer.
God damn it.
Southern.
I could have gone a way different direction.
Gothic.
that's a creative choice. So Southern Gothic, for those who don't know, is an artistic subgenre of fiction, country music, film, and television that is heavily influenced by Gothic elements and the American South. It's a very fun combination. Common themes of Southern Gothic include storytelling of deeply law, disturbing, or eccentric characters who may be involved in hoodoo, decayed or derelict settings, grotesque situations, and other sinister events relating to or stemming from poverty, alienation, crime, or violence.
Sounds like the South, yeah. All right.
Hey.
Yeah, right?
Yep.
There's no crime in the South.
Or banjos.
Hey, the fourth you gotta one on add there. A little bit. Yeah. But one of the big things that it also includes is elements of like a Gothic treatment of the South that were first apparent in anti and post-bellum 19th century like grotesques of Henry Clay Lewis and the de-idealized representation of Mark Twain. So it's like these combating ideas of like Mark Twain portraying the South in this like very like zippity-doo-dah kind of light.
I called him a poser. Get fucked in the pit, Mark Twain. It's a bitch.
Versus Henry Clay Lewis, who did more of like Southern Gothic type shit. And one of the other things that is a huge representation or a huge common theme in Southern Gothic is also talking about slavery and racism. Which also we're going to talk about in just a second, but yeah, I love Southern Gothic. It's such a good, there's so much to mess with there.
Oh yeah, I saw some of your examples down there and definitely true.
Yes, we'll talk about those as well. The genre was consolidated in the 20th century when dark romanticism, Southern humor, and the new literary naturalism merged in a new and powerful form of social critique. So Southern Gothic kind of turned into a way to critique all the, I guess, strife that was going on in the South in the 20th century. So
it's like a reaction to like Birth of the Nation happened. They're like, nope, yeah. Not like that. Not like that at all. We got to make a genre now.
Exactly.
Fuck this.
Yeah. And, some characteristics in Southern Gothic can be found in the warped rural communities that replaced the sinister plantations of earlier times. So, like, we'll talk about, actually, one of the examples is pretty much at a plantation, and it's just taken over, and it turns into this really Gothic, fucked up location, and it's so good. This differentiates the genre to its parent genre of American Gothic or even European Gothic, just based on, like, location. So it's important to note that the setting of these works is distinctly Southern. Like obviously, you can't take American Gothic and Southern Gothic, and you can't really intermingle them. Some additional characteristics include exploring madness, decay and despair, continuing pressures of the past upon the present, particularly with the lost ideals of a dispossessed Southern aristocracy and continued racial hostilities. So if you take all of that fucked up sadness and put it in a soup, you get Southern Gothic.
You get gumbo?
You get Southern Gothic gumbo, yeah.
Ooh, Gothic gumbo, there you go.
Hell yeah.
Some bloody disgusting gumbo.
Mm-hmm.
We should go back to New Orleans.
I was just about to recommend that.
Yeah, we gotta go back to New Orleans. Hopefully this time I won't have bronchitis.
God damn it.
Alex.
It'll be something else, Webster.
Don't I know, I was going to say, Alex not getting sick on vacation challenge still has...
Still failing.
Still failing.
At least the food poisoning was one day. It was one day.
It's true. Huh? It's true. I wasn't sick for the entirety of my cruise, but when I was in New Orleans, I was sick for the entirety of New Orleans. Oh, I felt so bad. I was coughing so bad on my flights, and people were looking at me like, and I was like, I swear to God, I don't have the super plague. I swear to God, I'm fine.
She's got it. She's got it.
Yeah. Tackle her. Tackle her now.
We were actually on bunk beds, and I was at the top bunk, and yeah, I didn't want to say nothing, but let's just say I was like, man, I hope she's okay. Because she was just like, and I'm over here like, man.
Little did you guys know, Phil was wrapped in plastic while he slept.
Wrapped in plastic. Yeah.
No, I took so many COVID tests on that trip. I was like, if I get COVID, I'm going to feel so, so, so bad. But no, I literally just had bronchitis.
Just bronchitis.
Just bronchitis. It's no big deal.
Just casual bronchitis. Whatever. Oh, man. Anyway, moving on from bronchitis. Some contemporary examples across the media for Southern Gothic can include the Texas Chainsaw Massacre for film, which is, I think, a very quintessential representation of Southern Gothic in film. Another good one for TV is True Blood, if you guys have seen True Blood. No?
I have not. No, no.
I haven't.
Okay.
I would catch the end of it because Game of Thrones was on next. And
really?
I had like 2 minutes of gap time.
Okay.
So I knew all the cliffhangers, but I didn't really watch the show.
You guys might like it.
I hear it's cool.
Anna Paquin's cool. Yeah, she's
I mean, yeah, it's got vampires and just like good, like, I don't know, like... lore. It's just fun. I think it's fun. I'm trying to think. Lovecraft Country is a good example.
Ooh,
for TV.
That I did see.
Yes, I know you saw that.
That was good.
True Detective?
Yeah, True Detective. Yeah, I was going to say. So my original example was True Detective Season 1 and 3, but I changed it to True Blood because I thought more people would get that, but apparently not, because my head is still in HBO HBO circa 2009.
Yeah, True Blood is definitely more, I would, for someone who's seen all three seasons of True, or not True Blood, True Detective.
True Detective.
True Detective is definitely more like on the thriller side. Think of it as like, David Fincher's Seven,
yeah,
but like in the South, and for three seasons, yeah, it was hot. No, yeah,
I remember when we were on our airboat tour in New Orleans. Not to bring it up again, but Adrian, I think, was just like, "This is just like True Detective."
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, this is True just Detective like the Arctic, isn't it?
Oh yeah, because we're all freezing to death.
If I can hype up True Detective a little bit more, definitely watch that. At least that first season, yeah. It's incredible. It's literally incredible what McConaughey and Woody Harrelson were able to do with that.
Dude, I started it and I fell off pretty bad. I need to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know why, I just couldn't get into it. I'll have to give it another shot.
Season 2 was hot, was very cool, and I would like to rewatch that because I feel like that's kind of an underrated one with Colin Farrell and Vince Vaughn.
Vaughn, right?
But Season 3 was Stephen Dorff and Mahershala Ali. That show was also really good, too.
Yeah, but I heard that one was good.
But,
well, I'm excited for Season 4 because it has Jodie Foster in it.
Oh, that's right.
What?
Yeah, that's right.
Season 4 is Jodie Foster.
Okay.
So... and then some other examples for TV shows. Ozark is obviously a good example. American Horror Story, Coven, and Freakshow, and Roanoke are all also kind of probably notable examples. I can't speak to their accuracy because I haven't seen them. And then also video games. Another great example would be Resident Evil 7.
One of the scariest games of all time, and yeah, this is, it's Southern Gothic to a T, that's for
sure. It's so much fun. I very much enjoy it. And you can even get it in music. There's Southern Gothic music is...
Creed?
It's kind of fun.
With arms wide open?
With arms wide open! Yep. Yeah, no.
Welcome so scared.
This place. Sorry, I'm harassing my dog now. I like picked him up and started singing. he needs it.
Apparently, another one is Red Dead Redemption 2, chapters 2 and 3. I don't know. I can't speak to that because I haven't played Red Dead Redemption.
There's some creepy stuff in there for sure, but there's also a zombies version.
Yeah, I was just going to say there's a zombies version of it.
And Red Dead 1, Undead Nightmare. That shit is Southern Gothic as fuck also. Oh, so there you go. Yeah.
But yeah.
I've played that. That's pretty awesome.
So that's our primer on Southern Gothic. We'll discuss whether or not this movie fits the criteria for Southern Gothic in discussion, but I love the genre, and I wanted to shoehorn it in here because we haven't discussed it yet, and I wanted to.
It's kind of fun.
And it's my birthday, goddammit.
You can shoehorn whatever you want.
Yeah.
All right.
But we are moving on to my part, which is release and reception.
See?
Boom.
Oh.
Ow.
I got the beer crack on there, too. Release and reception, for those who can't understand my shenanigan voice. On Rotten Tomatoes, the film holds an approval rating of 91% based on 107 critic reviews, with an average rating of 7.5 out of 10. The website's critics' consensus reads, "The Dark and the Wicked delivers on its title with an unsettling horror story whose deep dread and bleak outlook further compound its effective jolts."
Mmm.
People That's dig okay. it on there, man.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. I didn't realize it was such a critical darling.
Yeah.
It's COVID, man. Critical COVID darling. Fucked everything up.
She's so pretty.
She's so pretty.
Critical darling.
Kath Clark of The Guardian gave the film a score 3 out of 5 stars, describing it as, quote, "a nastily effective, lo-fi, psychological, haunted house horror," and added, "There is possibly not a single scary moment here that will be new to horror fans, but Bertino directs with such technical flair that I yelped at most of them, and half of the others, and half missed the others, my eyes squeezed tight shut."
Damn.
That's really well put.
Yeah, I agree a lot with that. Like, these jump scares aren't anything, like, wild, new, special, but they were still, like, times where I was like, oh, shit! Like... It was dope. I was telling a few of my friends about this, and I was like, it's nothing like, again, nothing new, special, life-changing, but they're pretty fucking cool when you do, like, encounter these jump scares.
I think a lot of it has to do with the execution of them, right? Because, like you said, like the review said, it's not necessarily innovative, but the execution and, like, the vibes of the movie are still ooky spooky.
Definitely got a lot of polish, I would say, for sure, when it comes to that.
Yeah. Highly agree.
All right. Kate Erbland of IndieWire was more critical of the film, giving it a rating of C. She praised Ireland's performance, but wrote that the film, quote, "despite a strong start, never coalesces into anything more than a collection of chilling images and a paper-thin logic," unquote.
Damn.
Kate's upset. Kate said, get this average ass shit out of my face.
I'm kind of with Kate. I kind of want to fist bump Kate a little bit, but we'll get to it.
I respect Kate here. So, paper thin logic? I don't know what all the paper thin logic.
Whenever Anthony is like quiet and I don't receive a text about the movie, I know he didn't like it and I didn't receive a text.
I gotta start throwing the scent off the trailer. He used to.
He's just gonna start texting at all the shitty movies and stay quiet about the really good ones.
It's because I can't genuinely come at her. I'd be like, so that was a movie. And then that's it. That'd be the text.
Well, no, because like you have like, or even when I got on the, or even when we got on the call, like you weren't just like, wow, like you never keep it to yourself if you like the movie. If you don't, you always keep it to yourself. I'm like,
boy, episode time, huh?
I'm calling. No, this is me calling
you.
So
we gotta power this one out, huh? God damn it. Oh.
I don't have a lot to say.
I'm going to say, Kate, paper thin logic, it's a movie about the devil.
I know.
Religion. Like, ma'am, the whole religion is paper thin logic. You need to take it easy just a little bit.
Thank you. That's all like paper thin logic. I was like, that's kind of paper thin logic? Like, I don't know about all that.
It's a supernatural style movie. Like, why are we upset that things don't make sense?
She's like, it doesn't follow the rules. What rules? Fucking.
I don't like it. Not my demons.
Not my demons. Hashtag not my demons.
God damn it. Letterboxd, The Dark and the Wicked has a 3.1 out of 5 average rating out of 23,000 reviews.
Yeah, people had a lot of opinions on this.
Speaking of opinions, Vinny Sims with 1.5 stars was unimpressed. Quote, did this movie dead ass try to pass off the act of scrubbing a stain off a sink as scary? Hey man, if I gotta clean someone else's blood, I'm upset.
I know.
Brian with 4 stars says what we're all thinking. Somebody check on Brian Bertino. Is he okay?
Is everything all right at home?
George Thompson with 3 stars. Quote, really peaks in the first act and blows its load with the first big scare. Pretty solid mood piece, but would have personally enjoyed a touch of character development.
I don't disagree with this. I do think that it blew its load a little early with the fucking fingers.
Yeah. That was very unsettling.
It was a little unsettling. It was just a little bit.
I kind of felt like it was going to happen, but they stretched it enough where I'm like, okay.
Oh, it's happening.
There we go.
Yeah.
Why does she keep chopping?
Mm-hmm.
Andre with 2.5 stars, quote, the horror of going to your parents' house. Told y'all not to come.
That's funny. That's hilarious.
And finally,
I do think that one, I put that one in there. I think that's funny for a lot of people, but I think for the most part, we all kind of enjoy going to our parents' houses.
I enjoy free food.
They got good internet.
I enjoy being fed.
They do got good internet, huh?
Yeah. My mom fucking feeds the shit out of me, dude. I gain like 10 pounds every time I go there.
I will say, my mom's house is like an infamous hellhole for internet. When I used to live there, you got nothing.
Ooh.
You could be connected right next to the freaking Wi-Fi, and it was still a bitch to do anything. It was the most upsetting place for internet.
You gotta stop downloading all that stuff on LimeWire, dude.
so you do agree the horror of going to your parents' house.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the food's there, but at what cost? At whose fingers?
Hey,
like,
my mom bakes me bread, and I only visit once a month, so...
Your mom's bread is delicious.
Yes, it is.
And finally, Ivan with 3 stars, quote, damn, bitch, this shit was dark. Turn on a lamp or something. when you guys watch this, what kind of, like sound setup were you guys watching it in?
Just my room. Just my regular-ass room.
Basic TV speakers. Volume turned up to, like, 30, probably.
I told Alex, before I rewatched it with her again, I looked up specific parts that I remembered the first time I watched it at work, and I did it with my headphones on. The mood was like, I was sitting alone in a courtroom, and I'm like, oh, something's going to kill me now. Like, I don't feel safe.
You're going to get murdered in a courtroom.
Yeah, the soundtrack for this is great. If you have a chance to go listen to it, it's on Spotify, and it will make you uncomfortable at work.
Okay.
I will say the mood definitely shifts, like, watching it nighttime versus daytime. Because the first time we watched it, it could just be, like, just for, like, rewatching purposes. But we watched it at the first time at night. And, like, that it scared the shit out of me the first time I watched it. Which informed why I picked it for this month. And then the second time, when we watched it for this episode, it was... in the daytime, I had to, like, close all the blinds, and it wasn't, like, I was like, okay, I can do this. I was still mad uncomfortable, but I was like, okay, I can take it.
I think it was probably the same time. It's just when we watched it the first time, it was, like, December.
Yeah.
So it was dark anyway.
It's dark. We watched it in the morning. What, do you think we live in Alaska?
Did we?
Yeah, remember we recorded Hops and Notes and then we watched Dark and Wicked.
No, it was the first time.
Oh, the first time, yeah. That was...
Oh, yeah, but sorry, yeah. I don't know what the hell time it was. I don't remember what I did that day.
That was in December. Don't ask me what I did last week. I don't fucking know.
No, yeah, I will attest to this, though, because I watched it in two parts. And then I was going to watch it again during the day, the second half, but... I, like, started it, I'm like, no, not the mood. I'm waiting 3 hours, fuck this.
I'm waiting 3 hours?
Yeah. And it was more worth it to watch it when it was dark, for sure.
It was, like, 8:30, like, maybe 9 o'clock when I watched this, like, the other night. And, I don't know what it's like to watch it in the day, but I'm pretty sure it's way cooler to watch it at night.
Mm-hmm. I think it would have been dope to see this in theaters with the, like, whole surround sound and, like, shit shaking.
But that's how it's feeling, too. I feel like it's more of a theater experience, for sure.
I feel like that's how it was probably meant to be shown, but this came out in an unfortunate year.
And then My Chemical Romance came back and gave us COVID.
Okay.
I blame them, by the way. That's my conspiracy theory, is that they came back...
Don't think I've heard this conspiracy theory. What? Enlighten me, please.
They announced their comeback in 2019, and I think the tour was announced a little bit later.
It was at the end of 2019.
Yeah, and exactly. And then we got COVID. Oh. And I blame them. They should have just. They
As if
stopped.
I couldn't hate them anymore, dude.
Yeah, right?
They're like, Black Parade, Black Plague, close enough.
Right?
Oh, God.
Think about it. Mm-hmm. Welcome to InfoWars, everyone.
They weren't okay, so they wanted to make sure that the whole world wasn't okay.
Okay.
Somebody get the shepherd. We need to be reined in.
I'm not going to tolerate My Chemical Romance slander in my birthday month.
In this year? In the month of your birthday?
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway, on that note, we're going to do a plot breakdown because there's nothing about this movie. So, Anthony.
Hey. Right. Oh, Phil's first.
Oh, it's Mia, isn't it?
Yeah, Phil, you're first.
Oh, okay, cool. Absolutely. Cool. Plot breakdown, part one. Numero uno. Here we go. Louise and Michael are siblings who are brought back to their family farm in Texas when their father's illness, which keeps him bedridden and uncommunicative, cared for by his wife and a nurse, worsens. Yeah. So there's that. Okay. All right. So
bad
far,
times,
so good.
Bad time, oh, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Their mother seems disturbed and expresses a desire for the children to leave. However, at night, she hangs herself in the barn after cutting off her own damn fingers in the fucking kitchen.
This is where the movie peaks. Again, peaks right here.
I do like that shot, though. I like the shot is inside the barn, and it's like a silhouette of the woman just like... I think it does like a slow, like...
I think
it pulls out or zooms out. I can't remember, but yeah, it was like a nice little silhouette of her just hanging, and then... Louise sees her from like a distance. She's like, "Oh fuck!" And I thought it was a nice looking shot.
Mama, no!
Mama, no! I do agree with Anthony where, like, there's two scenes of her chopping, right? The one right before the kids show up. And I thought at that point, I was like, oh, if it's not now, she's going to fuck up her hand at some point. This woman's getting wild with a knife.
Oh, yeah.
No proper chopping technique. She did, nope. Like, also, why is she chopping in the dead of night? Why is she, what's the carrots?
Middle of the night carrot chops.
Gotta do it.
Midnight stew? No midnight stew?
No.
Maybe
no.
This is the paper thin logic Kate was mad about. Who fucking chops at midnight?
I think I have a theory about this whole movie, but once it's discussion time, I'll throw in my little theory of what I think this movie's really about. It has a lot to do with this particular scene, the chopping scene.
Oh, okay. I cannot wait to hear it.
Yeah. So, but let's continue with the plot breakdown here. As time goes on, Louise and Michael start to understand what happened to their mother. And it's here where the nurse confides in them that she heard her whispering to the father, but it seemed as if she was speaking not to him, but to some other presence.
Mm-hmm. Papa, no!
Michael finds their mother's diary, which describes her fears of an unnamed and possibly demonic presence preying on her husband.
Way to spoil the movie, Mama. Jesus.
How dare you, Mom?
And here's how you defeat it. And here's a shotgun. And here, take this. And don't go alone. Avoid carrots.
And this map will take you to the Holy Grail.
Yeah, exactly.
And here's how you summon the soul of Charles E. Ray. Bam. There you go.
God damn it.
And so... at their mother's burial, Louise and Michael meet Father Thorne. Thorne. A priest who claims to have known their mother.
Does that look... No. No.
No. Alex, when she finds out like that we got two Thorne trilogy purists here, she's like, what have you done? Ave Maria. What have you done? What have you done?
What have you done? That's exactly it. Jesus. I just rewatched that like last week too. It was so fucking good.
Oh, I think I saw your story. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, I fucking love the Batman. So good shit. All right. So later that night, Father Thorne appears at the farm, beckoning them from outside before vanishing before their fucking eyes.
Dude, this...
You know the part where he's like, want some rope? I was like, damn, he sounds like Pennywise. Like,
yeah,
that voice, voice mod they did to it, I was like, oh, that was uncomfortable.
Yeah. Just like the come outside. Like, no! Yeah.
Why don't you come outside?
I'm good in here.
Mm-hmm. You know what was like big? It reminded me of... the devil in the movie Crossroads. It's a blues movie. But when he sees him and he's like, Michael. And like, dude, that should have been red flag number one. This random priest calls you by name and you've never seen him.
Yeah.
Exactly, Ghost.
Yep. He reminded me of that shot in Full Metal Jacket where Private Joker goes into the bathroom to find Gomer Pyle already in there, and he's got that creepy look in his face. He's like, hi, Joker. Like,
oh, that's yeah.
He's got that creepy face for sure.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable.
I didn't.
It was cool, though.
And his eyes were all whited out, and it just wasn't, it was unsettling.
Oh, yeah.
I do think the whiteout eyes was like a fun demon effect instead of the blackout that most people do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of fun.
I agree. Definitely scarier.
Yeah. All right, let's continue. Meanwhile, Charlie, a ranch hand who lives on a nearby plot of land in his RV, witnesses a vision of what appears to be Louise speaking indistinctly and cutting herself repeatedly with a fucking kitchen knife. The entity drives a distraught Charlie to shoot himself in the head with his own shotgun. Louise is subsequently unable to reach Charlie by phone, unaware that he is already dead.
This was sad.
Yeah. I kind of like Charlie. Of all the people,
he's the only normal person.
He seemed kind of cool.
He seemed normal. Yeah. He seemed cool.
The delivery from Louise when she's on the phone, when she's talking to the girl and finds out that he's, you know, Charlie's dead. Like I thought that was really, really good acting right there.
I enjoy Discount Sam Elliott in this movie.
Discount Sam Elliott.
God damn it!
Well, you are the dude, aren't you?
It's because they had to play. They had to pay Xander. They couldn't get Sam.
Look at his resume.
Look how long it is.
We can't afford to pay both of these men.
Look here, dude. There's a demonic presence going around here, these waters. But the dude
have
abides.
To use so many cuss words. What are you talking
about? Oh, man. That's so cool. All right, let's continue. Louise calls the phone number that Father Thorne gave her to ask her to ask why he visited the farm the other night. And this is where the man who answers claims to have never even met her and says that he lives in Chicago and has never even been to fucking Texas. Or Texa, as this script says right here.
Oh,
yes!
Shit!
Yes! I witnessed it!
Oh, shit. The land of Texa, which is the opposite of Texas. It's the liberal bastion of America.
Don't fix it, Webster. It's already been acknowledged.
It's done.
It's already recorded.
Happy birthday. Got her.
Oh, look at that. She's writing, fuck you, Phil, on the script right now. I love it. Oh, that's so good. All right, let's continue. Worried for their father's
safety. Fuck you, Phil.
Texa, fuck you, Phil. We got to put that on a shirt.
Texa, fuck you, Phil.
Abortions for all in Texa, fuck you, Phil.
It's just like in an outline of the state of Texas, and inside in just like really like cowboy font, it just says Texa, fuck you, Phil.
That's the upside down Texas.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
That's hilarious. All right. Worried for their father's safety, the siblings summon a doctor for a house call and request that he be moved to a hospital. And, however, the doctor determines that their father's health is grave and that he is on his own fucking deathbed at this point. And this is where he tells the siblings that he cannot relocate him to a hospital, as moving him could result in him dying en route.
Dude, that's like Kaiser shit. Kaiser's so stupid.
That's some HMO shit right there, man. Yes. That's some John Q shit right there,
that
man.
That is Kaiser shit, and I will tell
USA.
You about it when we aren't recording, because this exactly is what happened recently.
Living in America.
Yeah, Kaiser, Apollo Creed would have lived if he didn't have fucking Kaiser.
Yes.
He wouldn't have died in the ring.
Dude, Mufasa would have fucking lived, man.
Mufasa. Oh, fuck.
I'm so fucking chapped, dude.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
Anyways, take us into part two, please.
Part two. So, on the farm, Luis and Michael find that their large herd of goats have been brutally killed. And it don't look like no wolf no did it. Mm-mm-mm.
Wolves don't act like that.
I sure don't. Now, that night, Michael... I'm stuck on the southern accent now. Michael is approached in the bar by an apparition of his nude mama, who disappears as she approaches him in a somewhat Ari Aster-ish scene from what I felt when I watched this. So, yeah.
One of the Letterboxd reviews was like, people would eat this shit up if it had the A24 logo on it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, I heavily agree with that statement.
I was going to include it, but there were a lot of pretty good ones, but I that one just didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
But,
oh, yeah, that A24 logo pulls, like, immediately. That immediately sells people.
Yeah, I feel people would have eaten this movie up if it had that like, attachment.
100%. 100%.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, later while Louise lies in bed beside her papa, she has a nightmare in which the entity attempts to possess her, but she manages to resist it before witnessing her father levitate against the ceiling. Yeah.
This is a freaky sequence.
With his hands, like, reaching out to her.
Mm-hmm.
dying people in... moving. How dare they?
Never seen that before. Now, in the morning, Charlie's grandfather arrives at the
granddaughter.
Farm and... Huh?
You said grandfather.
Oh, Charlie's granddaughter, because that makes more sense, arrives at the farm and informs Luis that he killed himself 2 days prior. Ooh, but... this is actually part that creep me out. The girl's forlorn demeanor soon turns malevolent, and Luis realizes it is, in fact, the entity taking the shape of Charlie's supposed granddaughter, not father.
Ooh, ooh, not father. That would be she weird. Too,
yeah, that would be also... She transforms like, oh, wow, they're really old, man. Anyway, so she too disappears before Luis's eyes. The nurse arrives moments later to care for Luis and Michael's papa once again.
That's where it turns into M. Night Shyamalan's old.
Yeah.
I haven't seen old, actually.
I haven't seen it either, to be honest.
I just know about it conceptually. That's why I made the joke. Where he just, like, if it's Charlie's grandfather, and it's just like, wow, you're really old. Like, that's just, that's all.
M. Night Shyamalan directed by...
directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Boy, that was an interesting movie. Okay. So... wow. And the A24 did it? Wow. Anyways, meanwhile, Luis finds that Michael is a little bitch and fled the farm to return to his wife and his daughters, leaving her far behind despite, you know, them having moments just a little bit prior to that. Way to go, fuckhead. Anyways, Michael calls Luis from his cell phone and tells her that she too should leave.
This Damn. Was such a fucked up, like, she's so panicked, and he's so just like, I had to go, I had to go. He
fucking peaced out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, considering that the entity almost made him kill him, like, successfully kill himself.
He resisted it, yeah.
And he resisted it, and he's just like, I gotta go, I can't, like, I respect that, but also wake up your fucking sister and be like, I gotta go.
He got the hell out of Dodge, for sure.
Well, he's like, well, where maybe are you? He's like, driving all night. Bitch.
His logic's like, well, maybe if, like, the demon has her to play with, then I can get it pretty far.
Right? Before... yeah. Survival of the fittest. Bye, Louise.
Bye.
Yeah. No, no, we're totally real, like, siblings with love and stuff. You should sleep over there.
One of those things where, like, in certain books, you can tell that the author doesn't have any siblings based on how they write siblings.
Mm.
Oh. Just how, like, it's just, like the siblings interact with each other, and you can kind of tell, like, it's just, like, you've never had to actually, you don't have siblings.
Like, they're siblings, not strangers sitting next to each other on the bus stop. It's just, there's a different chemistry, no matter what the relationship is.
It's also, like, it's just, like, I don't have, like, weird nicknames for my siblings like that. I don't know.
Yeah. No, not really either. I don't know.
Like, I don't call my brother, like my brother doesn't call me, like, sis. Like, what's up, sis? Like, you know, like, it's...
It is weird, yeah.
That is a Hollywood nickname, for sure. mm-hmm.
Like, I can... It just feels inorganic.
Yeah, I agree.
I go up to my brother and be like, sup, fuckhead?
That's right. Exactly where I was going to go with that.
That's exactly
Hey, fuckface.
Like,
you're just how, like, the kids? Yeah, you're how are, like, your children?
It's like, bro, did you, like, gain weight? And he's like, oh, fuck yeah, dude.
Hey, see, you should write the sibling conversation dialogue here. I feel like you nail it.
It's different.
It's like, listen, bitch, I got to go.
Yeah. <So. Right.
laughs> Wake up, anyway. Big dumb bitch, I'm leaving!
Yes, there you go, alright. Oh, this is good. Anyways, moments later, the nurse, possessed by the entity, she actually begins stabbing herself with a pair of sewing needles, attacking Luis in the process before stabbing herself in the eyeballs, thus killing herself. And she...
Anthony, how'd you like that?
This is a little scary. This is a little...
I remember your needle thing.
Oh, yeah, I did not look a lot. I didn't look a lot the whole time, to be honest with you, because, I was definitely looking away for a lot of it, but also I kind of knew it was going to happen, so I was able to prepare myself a little easier. Mm-hmm. Like, these characters don't last.
Yeah.
They don't last.
I think seeing someone, like, work repeatedly with, like, sewing needles or, like, knitting needles, like, just, like, with, like, a particular kind of needle, like, I'm just, like, especially in horror, you can kind of be, like, oh, that's gonna come back up later. Like, it's not just a casual fucking hobby.
Yeah, pretty good effect.
I think there's a shot too where I think it's the first time you see the needles where it's kind of behind where she's sewing, and the needles are out of focus, but they take up a good percentage of the screen. Ooh. And I think that was a moment too where I was like, "Oh, somebody's getting their eyes stabbed." I didn't think it was her, but somebody was getting stabbed.
And a big old subtitle came up on the screen. It was like, "Subtlety." And then we were good. Because it was out of focus, so it's subtle. See?
Of course.
That's how you do it.
Subtle. Filmmaking,
baby. Anyways. But as also to give credit here, I feel like there was a similar acting and kill in Halloween 2 with Octavia Spencer, was it? In the beginning? Like that same kind of like, oh, I'm standing here. By the way, I'm fucking stabbed. Holy shit. But that one was a little more effective than this one for sure. But of course, Michael arrives at his home and finds the dead bodies of his daughters and wife in the kitchen in what appears to have been a murder-suicide, without any explanation. But okay, I get it. The devil.
Cue the Chris Benoit theme song.
I'm so glad I didn't have to say it. God damn it.
Oh, God, that was good.
Fucking man.
I'm so glad I didn't have to say it.
I had jumped through the table. Hey, jumped through the table.
I had a feeling.
He's got him in the cross face. He's in the cross face.
I had a feeling somebody was going to do it, or I was like, you know what?
I'm glad you did it.
I'm going to fucking say it.
I like that the two loudest moments in this episode have been just like screaming about wrestling.
You see?
As is tradition.
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. That's right, Danny. You're on the next wrestling episode, just so you know. So you're confirmed now, and it's going to be a loud one. So we're going to have their game down for that episode for sure.
Hell yeah. Definitely.
Anyways, a distraught Michael cuts his own throat, and moments later observes that the bodies of his wife and his daughters have, of course, disappeared. Oh no.
Ooh. Ooh, you know, baby.
He cuts his throat with a fucking pocket knife.
Yeah. You know,
that's a rough way to die.
We keep on bringing up Halloween 2, and let me bring it up one more time.
Oh, fuck.
I believe... this delivery, when he finds, you know, his daughter's dead, I think the actor, I forgot his name already, did a better job than our boy Brad Dourif when he found Annie's dead body, and he goes, "Ooh, no, Annie!
No!
No! No!"
I high-key, when we saw it again, I was like, and he spits, I was like, oh my god, Phil's gonna bring up the Annie scene. Yes, I didn't even say it out loud. I was like, Phil's bringing up the Annie scene.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I have thought of your Brad Dourif grief impression like a bunch of times since you've done it. Like a lot. In fact, I think I was like, I the drive up, I was just laughing to myself because like something happened. And I was like, I don't know why it was like, oh, right. I was just laughing in the car. I was like, why am I thinking about this right now?
What's wrong with
me? Oh, that's so good. That's
and then Phil didn't wake up and slept through half of Alex's party. So I'm like, that was prophetic. I knew something was up. Like, oh,
something was going on.
he like Phil possessed you for a little bit while you were driving.
Everyone's
and
here,
that's why
Phil.
He was tired.
Everyone's here.
Oh, I totally forgot that I slipped in.
That was, you know, what? That was his revenge for me missing his birthday.
Medieval times.
That's exactly what it was.
Holy fuck.
He could commit
true.
To the full bit, but he was like, let her think about it. Let her linger. Let her get a little scared.
Well, Savannah texted me, and that's what woke me up. If she didn't text me, I would have kept on sleeping. And missed out on karaoke.
You would have woken up at like 10 p.m. and would have been like, fuck.
Yeah. Probably even later. It probably would have been like midnight. I'm like, oh, fuck, dude. Is everyone still at karaoke? I'm on the way.
We were still there.
Coming from medieval times.
Yeah. Poetic justice.
Right? Which is funny because earlier that day, he did make a joke. He's like, oh, you know what? Webster, I can't actually go to your party. Something came up at work and I can't.
God damn it.
That's funny. Wow. That's true. That's very true.
That's true. Anyways. We're almost there. Almost to the finish line.
That was a fun tangent.
Anyways, our boy Michael, he realizes the entity has tricked his ass. Of course, when his wife and daughters enter the house just a few moments later and find him bleeding to death.
This was fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. That was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was like one of the dopest, like, oh fuck moments where it wasn't scary, but like.
Yeah.
It was horrifying.
Literally, oh fuck. Yeah, like, yeah. God damn, that sucks.
Yeah.
Kind of saw it coming. I'm sorry, guys. I don't know. It just.
I mean, just because you saw it coming doesn't mean it's less, you know.
Just because you guys be predicting shit on your fucking gaming podcast doesn't mean you're a prophet, sir.
Oh, that's true. We were a good ratio there. Anyways, so back at the farm, Luis regains consciousness at nightfall and finds that her father is dying. Moments after he dies, the demon in turn attacks and claims this bitch. And then that is the movie.
Everyone dies. Yay.
Unhappy ending. Woo.
I will say, I do like it, having seen so many horror movies when no one wins. It just
does. Oh, yeah. I like that too.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons why I really got into Black Mirror, was like, sometimes nobody wins, and it's good. Satisfying
have
to
you,
me.
Yeah. Have you started the new season yet?
No, I'm probably going to power through it this weekend, because I want to feel sad.
Fair. Yeah.
Have you seen it, Webster? Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet.
No,
I have not.
I'm probably also going to watch it this weekend.
Let's go!
I missed season 5, though, so I don't know, but I've heard this.
Wait, there's 6 seasons of Black Mirror?
Dude, yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, shit. Damn, this is season 6? Wow.
I don't think season I 6, watched baby. Any of season 5 either, but I've heard, like, literally multiple people have told me that season 6 is really good, so.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of people say skip season 5 anyways, so.
Yeah.
Season 5 is the one with Miley Cyrus?
I have no idea. No idea.
I'll figure it out.
Let the rain come down.
That motherfucker that is Hillary Duff.
That should have been the credits song to this McGuire's movie right there.
Phil and I also have an interesting relationship when it comes to Hillary Duff, because I gatekeep Hillary Duff from him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's why? Right. Yeah. Gatekeeping Webster.
Yeah,
she exists.
That's me.
She exists. She's out there.
I love to gatekeep. Gatekeep, gaslight, girl boss.
God damn it.
Oh man. I resist your Elijah Dushku gatekeeping, though. That remains a touchy topic right there.
Okay, cool. Can we, can I, before I forget this theory that I have, can I throw it out there right now?
Yeah, we're in discussion, so go
for it. Is it discussion time? Is it
discussion time? What's your theory, Phil?
All right.
Discussion.
I don't know if this movie has any set themes or anything like that. I don't know if Brian Torino was his last name? Tarantino?
Bertino?
Brian.
Bertino? Dominic Toretto.
Dominic Toretto. Stanley Ipkiss. Damn it. So I don't know if there's any like set themes for this movie, but I kind of saw some things only because I'm kind of experiencing this in IRL, not in IRL, because that, you know. But I think this thing is about dementia, I think it's because, all right, back in the chopping scene where she's chopping random things at random times at night, right? My grandma, who's, you know, she's 90-something, she's like 92, 93, she is hella dementia, dementiatic. I don't even know if that's the word, but...
I like it.
Yeah. But, yeah, she does things, she does not sleep, because she is up at random times at night, doing the most random things ever, and then my mom, freaking bless her heart, she's like, has the most patience that she has. She can even get, like, violent and stuff like that too, and it's crazy. I've known my grandma my whole life, and I don't recognize this person at all, not for the last like 6 years or 7 years since she's been diagnosed with it. So also, as many of us know, dementia can also be hereditary. It could be passed down genetically to offspring. When the dude resists the knife at first from cutting himself, he resisted I believe that's kids are, you know, and also let's face facts. Our heroes here, the protagonists, they're not that young. These are not college students. These guys are like 40, maybe a little older.
I mean, they straight up have like. I mean, Louise's life seems kind of like shitty, but like Michael has a fucking life, family, kids. That house looked pretty fucking nice to me. Like they seem like they. He's at least got a solid life going. Louise kind of seems like, you know,
she's the cool, right in the cool wave. Aunt.
Well, that's why it, when he said you weren't gonna leave, he was always willing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he was gonna. He, when he left, he knew she wasn't gonna leave.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's like, you weak. You are weak. I'm out of here.
And at the end, the dude legit just killed himself. I think that is a way of like dementia saying, hey man, you can resist, but you're eventually gonna get this shit one way or another, you know, unless there's like a some kind of medical technology that advances sometime later in the future that we have not seen yet. But I don't know, I think there's like some, I think this is like some slight metaphors here to dementia, because you see the old lady at first acting this way, and I recognize this behavior a lot. Every time I go visit my parents' house, and I'm just like, oh, dude, grandma acting crazy again? And my mom's like, yeah, grandma's acting crazy again. She's talking about demonic stuff and all these things. And I'm just like, for sure. And I don't know. I think there's some slight metaphors here to dementia. That's what I'm taking out of this.
So you bring up a really good point. One of the reviews, or like one of the questions that kept popping up is like, was the haunting ever actually real? Or was it like all kind of... like a metaphor for something deeper. And one of the, I guess, critiques is that people are kind of tired of movies being a metaphor for mental illness or for trauma and for death or grief or...
Oh, we're definitely seeing that a lot these days, yeah.
Yeah. Well, also, this came out in, like, 2020, so, you know, we've been seeing it for a while. But, no, I think that's a great point, and I definitely had that same thought myself, especially
Honestly, experiencing something really similar.
Yeah, I didn't see that either, but that actually elevates the movie a little bit for me. Because, I mean, there are scenes that definitely reflect that, which is pretty... Pretty good point, Phil.
I after watching this movie, I'm gonna be honest with you. I thought this movie was pretty cool. It's probably gonna be a 3 out of 5 for me. Maybe because like we're so desensitized and stuff like that. Like there was really not a whole lot of new things going on with this movie, so it just prompted me to like look deeper into what's being presented to us. And I was like, I'm seeing something here, dude. And I think there's like a kind of a rhetoric or some kind of talk for like some kind of mental illness, and I'm kind of leaning towards how a lot of senior citizens are with dementia, and how it's like pretty much it can be passed down. Yeah, that's what I got out of it, you know.
Yeah,
I dig that, man. That's a pretty solid theory.
I like the take.
I think you get that also, because so for me, this movie scared the ever living shit out of me the first time I saw it. It's probably one of the only movies within the last like year or so that has made me like yelp involuntarily. But you get that in the scene where the dad like, or like the demon, like the jump scare with her in the shower.
Yeah.
That's the scene that made me scream.
Oh yeah, Dad's got the white out eyes too, and like,
oh yeah.
And then you know the I don't know if you guys have seen Amityville Horror, the unpopular one, the one with Ryan Reynolds. Yeah. So yep. You know, like they have that effect where like his head, or like he sees demons, and the head kind of jolts around like that. I don't know if you guys remember it.
It's been years since I've seen that remake.
I think I do remember. but yeah, there's like scenes where when George is fucking like tripping out and he sees demons, like the head moves the way the dad did, and I was like, oh fuck, that's something like that would freak the shit out of me if I was trying to take a shower. And then of course Dad just starts pissing himself, and I'm like, oh, this is getting, we're going there now. Like,
yeah,
it made it to me, it made that jump scare a little more believable for Louise, because her dad is sick, and like if he did happen to, you know, get up and start prowling around unknowingly. Like, he probably would, like, make a fucking mess everywhere and, like, piss himself. So I was like, that was pretty cool. People probably thought it was unnecessary, but, you know.
Yeah.
No, that's, like, a realistic touch to the whole thing, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about your thoughts, Anthony?
Oh, I didn't like it.
I knew it. The only thing is,
I wouldn't say it's a... It's maybe too simple, I think, for... And it kind of stretched out. It's the definition of slow burn for me. It is one of those movies that, like that one Witch review we saw many moons ago, where it's like the 90 minutes that feel like the rest of my natural life. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it was like Diet A24, honestly, in a lot of ways. However, it was an extremely polished version of like a thin movie, if that makes sense. Like, it, what was there looked good, and I can see if I was maybe more absorbed in the movie or like allowed myself to be. I don't know what it was, but I can see what the buildup would be effective. I feel like the buildup was so telegraphed in most of the scenes, and that kind of didn't do it for me. And I've one thing that I'm starting to really like not enjoy in a lot of movies, and a lot more modern movies, is just mumbly ass boring characters. Like, they just mumble. They're like, this is my feelings. Well, we're gonna be silent and stare off. Cool, here's some pretty scenery. Next scene. There's a lot of
like
that.
I feel like they weren't given a whole lot to do. Like, they read the script, and I think the direction that they're given, they were just like, okay, so you want us to portray a certain, just kind of stoic, pretty much.
Yes.
Like, we're all stoic.
Yeah. Yeah, there could be something a little more, I think, to make it a much more effective movie. Make me care more, just a little bit. I think I just didn't care as much. It's has pockets of goodness, and it's definitely, like, it's an amazingly shot film. Like, this thing looks fucking clean. I'm like, give this man a solid-ass script, and he's gonna make fucking gold. Like, it's a really, really well-directed movie in that sense. I think it's just plotting as hell, and I don't like the characters, and it doesn't really pick up until the last, like, act. But when it does, you know, that's good. Like, the last act itself overall is actually pretty engaging, and almost makes you have a different view of the whole film, but then I remembered, like, I just wasn't into it until that back part. So, yeah, it didn't quite do it for me, unfortunately. I think it's just more of a symptom of just modern horror filmmaking rather than, like, you know, the movie itself, I guess. So, yeah, that's me. Sorry, guys.
Diet A24. Okay,
A24 light.
A24 light. A23, dude.
Gosh, damn it.
Just shy.
What about your thoughts, Danny?
I will say, so I did like this film a lot. The first time we watched it, I was like, holy shit, this is wild. But I do agree with you, Anthony, where, like, the characters are kind of bland. I think the most, like, character development or, like, character flavor that you see is when the priest is there before you know he's the demon, and Michael gets all heated, and he's like starts talking about his mom not being a believer and the family in general not really being a believer, and like you kind of see him give a little more emotion than just like mad that he's in his situation and working Michael, you know, like
that's a good I love, I actually really enjoy that scene, so I think you're right, it stood out amongst the beginning of the first act for sure. Yeah
I thought it was like, I was like, oh shit, this dude has more feelings than yelling at his sister and lifting hay and yelling at goats, like, all right.
Well, it makes him feel like a real character.
And then Louise was just, I think they kind of made her one-sided, but it could be the thing that, like, that I'll never forget Alex telling me when we watched, I forget which, it was probably the first Rob Zombie Halloween, where she was like, this man does not know how to write women dialogue. And I think that may have been a thing here with, like, he wasn't sure how to write this character, so he just made her very, like, flat and one-sided, like, a flat and one-sided character.
It's a common criticism, because I also say the same thing about Quentin Tarantino.
He's just got to see the feet.
Yeah.
He's about those feats. But no, honestly, like, I do enjoy it. I think, I don't think I'd watch this, it wouldn't be like a thing I would throw on just because, but I don't know, maybe during like a Halloween shenanigan, like marathon, I might throw it on, or if I want to show my friends something that they haven't seen and I'm like, hey, you might dig this, like, here you go. But, I don't know. I liked it. It's not, again, nothing special, nothing wild. It's just kind of fun for me.
No, I feel you. It'd be a good marathon movie. I could definitely see that. It would change things up a lot for sure in the schedule, I would say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I think for me, my thoughts have kind of changed a little bit. I think rewatching this movie, because the first time I watched it, my mind was blown. Like, I thought it was, like while the plot wasn't very unique or, like we said, it didn't really do anything new, the scares were really, really effective for me when I first watched it. Mm-hmm. I think the second time, it does, if you're really, really familiar with horror, I unfortunately think there's some diminishing returns the more you rewatch the movie. But overall, I do think it's a really bleak movie, and it makes me generally speaking, I've talked about this before on other podcasts or on other episodes, but I do like movies where at the end, I kind of feel like I've been stabbed in the chest. And this kind of, and it does give me that feeling. I like movies where there isn't a happy ending, and sometimes it's frustrating, but this I think does kind of give the best of both worlds, where it's like everyone's dead, so there is some resolution there. It's not the happiest resolution, but there's resolution, right? But I'm glad I picked this, just because I think that they're having varying opinions, and there's a lot to chew on there. But I think this is a really fun movie. I would like to show this. I would like to suggest this to other people to watch, to get their thoughts on it, because clearly it's divisive. As you were talking about your thoughts, Anthony, I had the pretty much exact opposite thoughts. I think, which is rare for us, I know.
I know, right? We're usually on the same wavelength.
We usually are, but where you were talking about how you liked the back, or how you liked the last act of the movie, I liked the first two better than I liked the last act.
Oh, interesting.
I liked... Same. I feel like the last act was a little just kind of rushed for me.
I was thinking the same.
Yeah. Steve feels on my wavelength right now.
Yeah, I know. We've slowly been merging in three ways, and I'm just
Mini me, move down the bench.
How about no?
He's crazy Philly. Dutch bastard.
Philly's on fire.
Oh, that's interesting.
Incredible. Let's see here. So we talked a little bit about Southern Gothic. Do you feel like this movie fits into the Southern Gothic genre based on what we discussed?
I would say so. Yeah. I mean, I think you brought up the word that I couldn't use to describe, because I was like, what's that one word that's really hitting me when describing this movie? And that's bleak. And yeah, it's hella bleak, and in more ways than one. But as in terms of describing Southern Gothic, I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's missing certain elements of I don't know. I think that as I was watching it, I want it to be Southern Gothic, but I feel that there's some elements that don't necessarily make it I think it's 70% Southern Gothic, you know what I mean? There's certain elements that it doesn't necessarily hit. But also it doesn't but also Southern Gothic doesn't always have to necessarily take place in New Orleans or, you know, on the bayou. So I think this was an interesting take on that, which I do appreciate.
It's Texas Southern Gothic. It's Southern enough, but it's still its own thing.
Yeah, it's still deep Texas,
Texas Gothic. It's new subgenre.
New subgenre. Texas Gothic. There it is. I love it. So we kind of already talked about the other stuff. So I'm just going to go into the silly little question before we go into the other stuff. But what is the ideal salad you're making in the dead of night that prompts you to chop your own fingers off?
God damn it.
Oh.
Mm. Okay. At Mattel, I'm not allowed to talk too much about what goes on in Mattel, but I am allowed to talk about their food, their cafeteria. Yeah. Their cafeteria, they have this sizzling steak salad that is off the walls, amazingly good. It's my favorite thing to order for lunch. Yeah, and it's like prepared by Chef Jose. Chef Jose gets down. So I would ask the demonic presence to possess me so I can go to work. demand Chef Jose to give me the recipe so I can take home, go to the apartment, and it's 2 a.m. and I'm making myself a sizzling steak salad straight from Chef Jose's talent.
Nice.
Damn, that is an actual legitimate answer. I appreciate that.
Nice. See, and you kind of alluded to what I was going to a little bit with just one word, Phil, because I'm going to be doing this at the Salad Bar and Sizzler. That's when it's going to happen.
That's
Salad Bar and Sizzler?
Yeah. I'll be putting all my shit together. Eat? Yeah, all I can eat. I paid for it. I'm like, I'm not getting a steak today. No, ma'am, no coffee, shrimp. I'm going to the salad bar, and then some trauma is going to overcome me in the middle of all the children laughing around me and shit. And it's just it. I'm just, why is he chopping the carrots for? Done. So, yeah.
You know what I miss? In terms of salad bars, you know what I miss? Soup Plantation.
Oh, Webster, ooh, no. Oh yeah, they died. That'll make me.
R.I.P.
Oh.
Another fucking relic of COVID, man.
How dare you?
That one hurt a little bit.
That one hurt. I fucking miss Soup Plantation, man.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
I was going to say the salad bar at Soup Plantation, but now the salad bar at Sizzler has been taken.
There's a much lesser salad bar. I feel bad about it now.
How dare you?
Yeah.
So I do think for me, it would be a legitimate instance of me accidentally chopping off my finger. One of my very cathartic activities is chopping vegetables. It's very soothing for me, and I do kind of space out when I do it.
That's the most white woman thing you've ever said on this podcast.
Oh, for sure. I turn into my mother. Every day I say something where I'm just like, oh my God, I'm turning into my mom.
Chopping vegetables, fucking wine right next to me. Jesus Christ, what's going on?
Okay, first of all, it's still
how
a beer.
Old am I? Usually what's happening?
Usually it's a seltzer or a beer. I haven't elevated to wine levels yet. I'm not.
Wait until you hit your 30s, Webster.
Oh, no.
It's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to be a wine person when I hit my 30s. You guys aren't wine people in your 30s.
Yeah, but we're messes. You're fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I do think I am going to space out and chop off my fingers. One of the Letterboxd reviews is someone tell Brian, what's his last name? Brian Bertino? Yeah, yeah.
Stanley
Ipkiss.
Someone tell Brian Bertino that fingers have bones in them.
Hey man, we don't. That could be a freshly sharpened one.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, those are her Japanese sushi knives that she got. She imported right there. That's why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure.
The one that comes with the pyramid scheme.
Oh yeah.
Oh, the pyramid scheme knives. For sure.
The best, man. I think it's not the ideal salad, but the way it would happen to me is I'm going to go over to like my mom's place for some kind of breakfast for a holiday. And she always puts me to work, of course. And because I worked at Disney in kitchens, she knows I know how to chop fruit. So she's just going to put a knife in my hand and, like, give me a pineapple. And I'm just going to be... It's going to be after some shenanigan of a weekend where I'm hungover and I'm not paying attention. And suddenly the fruits have fucking fingers in them. And I don't even realize I'm bleeding out until it's too late.
Oh.
Like, that tahine's really liquidy today.
Tahine, goddammit.
That's good. That's okay, funny. That's a good one. All right.
But yeah.
Great. Everyone has their own traumatic salad experiences. Very good. Except for Phil.
Phil sounds incredible. Like, Phil gets a solid salad out of it. And there's no way you're not, like, eating pieces of the steak while you're chopping, too.
Dude, I want to... Steak salad is fucking incredible.
It is really good. Salad,
guys.
Oh, it's really good. You guys should just come to work, and I'm pretty sure I mean, we'll see. I'll talk to security. I'll let you guys get into the cafeteria.
Oh, you think you can...
We're only here for the salad, bro.
Drive
you guys
want
to see the history of Mattel?
All the way to Mattel just to be like, hey.
Yeah. We What's keep up hearing with- about this... The steak salad.
We heard it fucks.
We heard it fucks.
Does the salad fuck? We are here to find out.
You guys don't want to do a company tour to see the history of this long? Like, no, we're here for the food.
No, we're here. Sir. We're here for the salad.
We're here for the salad.
So it's been a while since we've done these. It's been a while since we've done this. What is your guys' kill or death of the film?
It has been a while, huh? Fight.
Yeah. We kind of forgot about it for a while.
Kill of the film.
I mean, I don't know, dude. When the dude offs himself because he thought he, you know, his wife Chris Benoit, his family, I thought that was a pretty good kill.
I was kind of leaning towards that one a little bit, too. Well, okay, I would also say, even though it was off-screen, Charlie dying affected me a little bit because he was the only guy I was like, man, he's kind of like a cool dude.
He's just a chill dude.
Yeah, he deserved that shit, so I give it to him, even though it wasn't
a blue kill.
That was
not off-screen. Yeah, he saw the brains come out of his head.
He shot himself. Yeah, he totally shot himself.
I must have been looking down. Fuck.
I was thinking...
God damn it, sir.
Were you playing Zelda? Be fucking honest.
No. I did not play Zelda for this one, because I'm giving myself a two-day break. I'm playing too much.
He's currently playing Zelda.
I was going to say, I saw you playing Zelda the other day.
What?
After,
did I play it?
Was it? I think it was. It might have been a couple days ago, but
he had it.
No, I probably had it on to turn it off so I can play Smash.
It was after Smash.
Oh shit! Maybe it was that day. No, that was before. It was not during the movie.
He was caught in 4K.
I was gonna say caught in 4K. I see everything.
Oh my god.
You know, mine's also going to be Charlie. His death was the one that fucked me up, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It just made me sad. He did nothing. Discount Sam Elliott did nothing wrong.
He did not.
I'm going to agree with you two, man. I'm going to pick Charlie, but like, I think it's because of what leads up to it, where you see her like stabbing herself, and there's no flinching, nothing. The knife just boom goes in, and you're just like, and it happens so many times, and I'm like, why?
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm working
on that. Yeah, that's a pretty built up death there. There you go.
Yeah, I think it's more of the build than the actual like shotgun in the mouth, top of the head just exploding.
Yeah.
That may have been why I was looking away now to think about it, because her face stabbing and all that shit was got to me a little bit.
Interesting.
Yeah. You hear the squish too.
Alright, let's rate this bitch out of 5 fingers.
five chopped fingers.
5 chopped up fingers.
Fine boneless fingers.
Yeah, 5 boneless chopped up fingers.
Does that technically make them nuggets?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're boneless fingers. They're nuggets for sure.
God damn it.
You know, you guys brought up Sizzler earlier, and do you guys remember Sizzler having these dinosaur chicken nuggets?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I don't know why, but 9-year-old me always thought that those fucking T-Rex chicken nuggets were definitely fucked back then.
Oh, yeah, dude, that made me love ranch.
These nuggets
I'm
fuck!
I'm like, I'm a ranch boy now.
Nine-year-old me is like, these nuggets fuck!
Mijo, like what are you doing?
Dad, they fuck. Please.
Rating, I'll go first because mine's probably the lowest. Okay. But also, I think our discussion and your guys' enthusiasm made me like the movie a little more in retrospect. So I'm going to give it a down the middle 2.5.
Wow, that's actually higher than I was expecting.
It's not a bad movie. It's another one of those where I'm like, it's just not for me and it's kind of fucking annoying sometimes. But there's enough polish there where I think I can see why people like it.
It's just not for you, and that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, just stop having mumbly, boring characters in weird-ass 90-minute movies. Please. Please.
Keep going, Flynn. Keep going. Release him. Release evil Flynn, dude. Keep
going, dude. No, okay. No, take the sunglasses off.
Take the sunglasses off.
All right, I guess I'll go. I'm going to go just a little higher. This is 3. A part of me was like, man, am I desensitized? Or is this just kind of like, okay, I've seen this. Yeah, it's cool. I would really love to know what the budget for this was, but like, it seems like it's really low. But I just don't know. And honestly, dude, I appreciate it for what it is. Yeah, it was like nothing groundbreaking for me, nothing new, but honestly, I kind of dig it. I don't think I'll see this again. But it was nothing that really just caught my eye. This theory or this theme or this whatever I took out of it kind of makes me appreciate it more. I'm not sure if that's what the filmmakers had intention for, but like, you know, many movies will be, you know, a lot of people will take something out of it when the filmmakers had no intentions of presenting that. And they're like, oh yeah, hey, yeah, that's so, that's one way of dissecting our film.
That's art, baby.
Yeah, right, exactly. There. Exactly. Okay. That's yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, if you know, put that aside, it's still a pretty enjoyable movie. It's cool. It's you know, it's pretty average for me. Yeah, it's cool. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
So 3 Xander Berkeley IMDb credits. Is that the
yeah? Yeah. Yep.
That's me. I'll go next. I'm gonna give it a 3.5. Like I said, and like we've been saying. Nothing new, nothing special. It's just kind of fun. It's definitely like unsettling and creepy at points, and like some of these kills are kind of fun to watch. But yeah, you know, I mean, I might watch it again. I probably won't for Alex. I don't know how long it's been since the first time we watched it, but probably for like that long again. But I do know that it's a movie that I can throw on and be like, hey, I enjoyed this at one point, and like I'm not going to be upset rewatching it, you know.
Did we lose Webster?
Did we lose Webster?
Ma'am,
hi.
Oh, sorry. Did you pee?
No, my cat was making noises, and I muted myself. I was talking that whole fucking time. Son of a bitch.
Oh no!
Wait, you were?
Whoa! I feel so bad.
No, I was providing commentary. I was like, yeah, that makes sense, and I was just like, oh yeah, yeah. Oh. You know, I wasn't just like, hello.
So I didn't just talk like a dumbass to nobody for a little bit. Like,
No. I heard you. Well, also, you didn't respond because you said, I don't know, since the last time we watched it, and I said 6 months, and then you were just like, what? Or you didn't say anything. Well,
you didn't say anything.
No, I know. I'm sorry. I was muted.
Happy birthday.
My bad. So I would give this movie a solid 3. I don't know where I stand on the rewatchability. Like I said earlier, I think it kind of has just some diminishing returns in terms of like scares for rewatchability. I do feel like it dragged a little bit longer for me for like the whole 90 minutes. The second rewatch, the first time I watched it, it was the fastest 90 minutes of my life, which is funny, again, considering that Anthony felt like it was the longest 90 minutes of his natural life. So I'm gonna give it a 3. We'll see how I feel about rewatching it in 6 months.
6 months to like a year, maybe.
Yeah. I think it might be something that I like. If I feel like someone would, really, really enjoy it, then I would rewatch it in that instance. But yeah,
I will say though, definitely, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. Like. Go check it out. The first watch is a lot of fun, and again,
just watch it at night. Lights out
at night.
Yeah,
turn the sound up.
Yeah,
I'm with it.
But any other final thoughts on The Dark and the Wicked?
I want Sizzler now, though.
I know.
Yeah,
I know. Like, now we're talking about Sizzler and salads, like
steak salads.
Goddamn,
we going to Sizzler. We going to Sizzler. Let's go Sizzler, y'all.
All right, guys, that's it for this week and the conclusion of my birthday month. I wish everyone Yay! Liked it, but c'est la vie, such is life. That is it for this year. Next month, we're kicking off our season finale month.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah. And we have yet another guest next week.
That's true. That's quite the consecutive run we've had, actually.
Yeah.
Bring all the people.
All the people. And so stay tuned for that. It'll be a fun one. And then in the meantime, if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. And you can find Phil on Instagram and YouTube at Phil Acevedo.
Hell yeah.
Danny, where can people find you? Plug your shit. Shout things out.
Look at me plugging my shit like a peasant, not having Alex do it.
You it's weird, find isn't it? Me. It's fucking weird, isn't it?
I do it every time. I am on Instagram at Wrathchild714. I am also on Turning Tables Podcast, which is a podcast under the Horrible People's umbrella, which is Turning Tables Pod on Instagram. I also have another podcast called Hops and Notes, and I'm on Instagram at Hops and Notes Pod, where we talk about beer and music. Turning Tables is a D&D podcast, by the way. I know we got some nerds out there. Go listen to it. I'm putting them through it right now. I am the current DM, and they got to deal with me.
It's true. He's putting us through it. We're all about to die.
it's getting rough.
But they all got your fingers. You got all your fingers.
For now.
They currently have all their fingers.
For now.
Oh, shit. Okay.
cool. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And I guess the moral of the story is y'all shouldn't have come.
Yeah. Told y'all not to come.
Told y'all not to come.
Woo!
Bye.